Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop, and hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Natjan Ratandaira, co-founder and CEO of Shipyari.
COVID was unfortunate for many, but it was fortunate for us. We got a blessing in the disguise during that period. Initially, when India went into the lockdown, yeah, Everybody was curious what is happening, what need to be done, what not need to be done, and all the chaos around the regulations and everything was happening. So we took a time of 2-3 months, evolve our system, evolve our technology, evolve our process. That helped us in scaling up the business, because when the machinery is running, you never got a time to think about it.
This is Natjan. He's a chartered accountant by qualification and entrepreneur by heart. Early in his career, he grew from account executives to finance director. The idea of doing his own startup came out of a logistical problem they faced in their own business. It led him to co-found Shipyari in 2013. However, that wasn't enough to support a single bread-earning member, so he kept his corporate job and later moved to his next corporate job at WPP. Shipyari has been a hustling startup for close to 7 years, but came into the sustainable and scaling phase in the pandemic, which appeared to be a blessing in disguise. The growth that he saw during this period forced the entrepreneur in Natjan to go full-time on this and leave his high-paying job. Their vision is to create a world that's enabled by better controlled operations that can deliver products with commitment and guarantee. And their mission? To transform the last mile delivery experience to the end consumers. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Natjan to my podcast. We explore how Natjan has been able to build a successful logistic tech business without any logistic experience. He shared how he's been able to scale his business from 20 to 100 FTE in under 2.5 years, and what first principles of thinking enabled them to spark growth while the world was getting into lockdown. Last but not least, he shares advice on what mentality to develop to stay resilient and build a business that has staying power without desperately chasing funding. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn 4 things. Firstly, how to go about approaching the problem you solve for in a way that creates defensible differentiation. Secondly, how to prepare yourself to succeed in expanding your business internationally. Thirdly, how being a novice in a particular domain can be a big advantage to create a successful business. And fourthly, what human skills are required to build predictable traction. Well, hi Natjan. Thank you for making the time available today and being a guest on today's podcast.
Hi, Ton. It's my pleasure to be here and discussing with you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, how this came about is through some recommendations. People recommended you. I was recently on a different podcast and we had a discussion around the SaaS companies that they were impressed by. That's where your name got mentioned. So happy to have you on the call. And I've been looking into what you're doing, Shipyari. And it brings some memories back about my history at Unit 4, when in the very early days of my career, I was also doing a lot of things in the logistics space. So good to be, to have a conversation on that, where the technology is today and where the industry is going. Before we start talking about your company, as a person, what do you get most energy from?
So I have a twofold story to that. So I come from the finance background. So if I see my origin, I'm a chartered accountant. And I come from the finance background. So obviously, numbers always excites me. And more than numbers, the problems excites me there. That how you can solve the problem with a better number and the better presentation with respect to that. And that's when my role for the logistics works well with me, because logistics is equivalent to the problems in the Indian ecosystem, if I say. But if you try to solve it very well with the technology or with whatever number or the strategy you understand, that's motivate me to work on the new problem every day and try to solve it with the best of my capabilities. So solving a problem with a limited knowledge, which I have it, I would love to explore that problem and go to the root of it, understand it, why it has happened, the way it has happened, and get resolved it.
Cool. That's the right mindset, you know. So many companies start with a product looking for a solution, looking for a problem, and you start the opposite around, which is the right way to start a company at the end.
Okay, so journey started for Shipyard is like that only. So I was a finance director in one of the company, and I was keep listening the logistics problem in and around me, because I'm talking about 2011-12, when I just completed my post-graduation and I went to join a company. I was always listening a logistic as a problem statement. And whenever somebody is talking to within the department or anything, they say logistic is a pain. Logistic is a problem. It's complex solutions. I was wondering why these people are calling like that. There has to be something to be solved for that. And me and my co-founder, Vishal, we were discussing, because we always wanted to get into the business, though we were doing our jobs. But I thought I always wanted to solve some problem. We were discussing, we come up with 2-3 ideas. And we start exploring it. And we started the company in 2013. Yeah. So both of us are a non-techie, non-logistic background. But we started with the journey saying that we wanted to solve this problem. And we'll find a tech, we'll find a logistics in the journey. And we'll try to make it happen the way we wanted to make it happen. On this Sunday, we are completing our 10th year. So this will be our 10th anniversary on the 9th of April. And we were just cherishing the moment, me and Vishal, and saying that how did we started without having any technology knowledge, without having any logistic knowledge. But today we are at least doing something. Obviously, I'm not saying we are doing large scope, but we are doing something in the ecosystem, which is helping other people to solve a list of their problem.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I've had a number of CEOs on my podcast that were non-tech and non-domain specialists. Call them naive. You know, that's what I said about himself. You were very naive. You just kind of went in and see how we could solve it. I think it's actually a benefit in order to come in with some fresh eyes.
Yes. That's helped us.
Yeah. To see the problem and to start solving it in a way that the industry is not, that's not the normal route. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm really getting really interested to understand.
The domain guy sees the problem. Basis what his experience about the, so let's say somebody from the logistic guy would see the problem as a logistic problem. We try to see it in a difference that how can I solve that problem? Because for the logistic person, it needs to unlearn the previous learning to solve this problem. That was the, I would say, the benefit I had it. I do not have any prejudice or any perception in the mind. It's just that I heard it. It's a problem or it's a pain which needs some solution.
Exactly. So there's 10 years in the journey right now. I see on your website, well over 20,000 businesses work with your solution today.
Yes.
Which is fantastic. Grow beyond geographical boundaries. You just started talking about the Indian ecosystem. Are you only selling in India or is it also abroad?
So currently we are helping Indian seller to sell it cross-border. So we are not there in the international market yet, but we are making sure our parcels or our deliveries for the Indian consumers and Indian sellers are reaching to the consumers cross-border. We are thinking to go beyond the border sometime soon, but something is not in the plan as of now, but we'll go global soon.
Okay. I mean, it's all about making choices, right? Like, where can you make the biggest possible impact? And staying close to home, and India is a big market.
Exactly. So we can see, out of the every 6th person is an Indian. So why do you want to solve it initially for somebody else? Why can't we solve it here in India? And then once we know that this market is penetrated well, we are there, we established it well, we would love to go to the market as well. The experience which we had it with most complex market with respect to the logistics, it will be an easy task for us to replicate it into the different region.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. I mean, it didn't even come to mind. Every 6th person is an Indian, and it's so true. So, like, you started the company 10 years ago, started solving problems in the logistics space. What happened, or what is the before and after? You know, how is the world going to be different when everybody starts to use Shipyardi?
So currently, or when the journey started, the problem to solve for the Shipyardi was a different. So when I'm talking about 2011-12, the e-commerce was just coming into India.
Yeah.
And there was no logistic, single window solution for the logistics. And everybody was like the big of the giants, like FedEx of the world, Blue Dot of the world. All the big companies were there in the India. It's not that they were not being solving the problem. They were solving the problem, but you know, the big companies have their own process and the SOPs, and e-commerce needed something agile to be solved. So that problem, we tried to solve it then. Now in 10 years, we tried and we see that everybody has evolved around the technology, because this era of the COVID or the pre-COVID, everybody is moving towards the technology and the digitalizations. So now the problem which we wanted to solve it henceforth will be different than what we solved it now. And the next growth will come in the more of a customizations and the personalization services. And I was talking to somebody else in the last week. I said it, logistic landscape is changing. And he said, what is that change you are looking at? I am saying it, the logistic will change or will be refined or will be seen with the three E's. So there has to be, one is efficiency, one is experiment, and one is the experience. So everybody needs to work around these three E's to make sure whatever they are selling it or solving it gets that either of the one as a byproduct or as a main result to the consumer.
Very well said. Yeah, exactly. Because these are magical things together. They work in a tandem. The moment you do them well together, it becomes, I'm talking about my book, The Remarkable Effect. It creates that effect.
Yeah. So if you see, everybody is talking about consumer experience. To give the consumer experience, you can't do the what you used to do it, because they need a, so buyer has evolved, they become impulsive, they need everything faster. So hyperlocal growth, which has happened off lately in India, the last mile changes, which has happened off lately, the dark stores concept, which is there in India. I'm talking the typical logistic language. Pardon me if this doesn't make sense, but I'm saying it. The logistically changes, which is happening in India off lately now, the O&D, the government is also introducing one or two new policies and the products to unified and the standardized e-commerce and the logistics. That all is evolving. You need to change the way you used to think it. So to do that experience or to give that experience, you need to keep experimenting it. That experiment, you need to have an efficiency in the process. You can't burn it all your money in one experiment. So it's always an thrive to achieve it more out of the lesser is what Indians are known for.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, I think it's universal. This has nothing to do with India itself.
Yeah, I'm just...
Good point. So when you started, the problem was a different one. The market has evolved. I mean, of course, it's 10 years. The market is shifting so rapidly, which makes it a fascinating thing in itself, of course. What has been an early decision that has been really important for the success that you have today?
That's an important question. So we had two, three turning points in our journey when we started, what we thought about it. And as the time comes and as the event comes, there are two, three changes which has happened in a lower journey. And the latest being, I will talk about the latest. We started thinking, so when we started, we were two of us, so me and my co-founder. We have a smaller team. So if I talk about 2020, we must be 20 people then. Now we are approximately 100 team in last 2.5 years or 3 years. We've grown it. We have 100 people team, 6 offices all across the India now. The decision to expand the team and expand the geography with a right amount of talent in the system. Obviously, when you wanted to grow, you need to have a larger, well-experienced team in your system, or rather in your organizations. A person who is knowing more than you has to be there in your team. So that's a decision of changing or making our CXO table larger, bringing certain more experienced and talented people in the ecosystem or in the organization helped us to see the growth. We are seeing it now. And it is, I'm looking a green, positive future for us with the team which I'm getting it now.
Yeah. So I've heard that.
The expansion of a team with the right talent was the main evolution is, I would put it for my next growth. What I'm betting on is I'm betting on that.
Yeah, that is always critical, but it's hard to do. And what have you learned in that process? You know, what would you do different? Well, yeah. What are you doing different right now than when you were just starting this whole thing?
Journey of a 0 to 1, what we lived, helped us to be here, but that might not take it to the next leap. So that unlearning experience, which I was a star talking about logistic domain, is we are now facing in the organization. What we did it for 0 to 1 will not work now, but obviously we are by no way demeaning what we did it, But from 1 to 10, we need to do something differently. Like you said, it can't be the same process. So bringing more technology, bringing more talent, bringing more SOPs and the processes and the systems, that will help us to scale it faster in a sustainable manner, which we can defend it in the future. Because growth is a threefold item. It's not a one-way. Either you scale or either you sustain. It has to be scale, sustainable, and the defendable. Somebody coming with the heavy pockets may kill you.
Yeah.
So you need to have something to defend it for it. So I said growth as a threefold package.
It is. That's exactly the reason why I'm asking this question, by the way, that what creates your defendable differentiation? And of course, talent is one, because at the end, you know, that's the magic of the team working together. So many SaaS CEOs, although we're in the technology industry, have told me, you know, the technology part is not the hardest part. It's how do you build a great solution with the team to do it in a way that is...
That's a lubricating machinery which needs to run to solve the problem of consumer.
Exactly.
Tech is obviously the important part of that machinery, but yeah. Not the part, but the somebody who is running the full organizations or a different department is important than only the tech. So though we are called as a SaaS company, but we are a company at the end of the day. So it's not just a SaaS. You need to solve the different problems in the organizations and around the organization as well.
Yeah. On the journey, what always fascinates me, like, what has been the hardest nut to crack? What has been really, really tough for you? Yeah. For example, to get that breakthrough going.
So when we started our journey, it was, I'll start from the beginning. So I come from the finance background and so is my co-founder. It was initially hard for people to making understand what we are doing it. So there was a logistic company is there. There is a consumer. Everybody is asking, what are you doing it? Yeah. What is that problem you are solving it? So for initial 1 or 2 years, it was difficult for us to explain it to people what we exactly do it, because they see it differently. What we wanted to build it or what we wanted to start it. In the journey, we also started certain experimentive approach in the long way, which helped us understand more, market more, understand the segments more with respect to the solutions. And that is what driving us. The solving the consumer problem was the focus throughout the journey that helped us to what we are achieving it now. We reach at this level.
Very interesting. The other side is like, how do you position yourself? What is your value proposition that needs to be clearly understood? The other thing that triggered me here is that you say we are solving the consumer problem, where your customers are not consumers.
Yes.
But logistics companies. So what you're looking at is their customers, the customers of your customers.
So we are B2B2C. Yeah. So we are not responsible for our B2B relationship. We are responsible for B2B2C. What problem we are solving for the end consumer. And in a exactly. chain, obviously, you are solving the problem of a person who you are dealing with, or the person who is paying for the services.
Let me make a small interruption here. And Jonas just made an excellent remark about what enabled him to create defensible differentiation in his company. Instead of obsessing over the physical user of their product, they obsessed over the physical receiver of their services, i.e. the customer of their customers. That allowed them to take the right mindset about the actual problem that needs to be solved, the best possible delivery experience for the end consumer. It's a trait remarkable software companies master. They focus on the essence, what their business is really all about. In the case of Shivyari, that's the experience across the entire B2B2C process, instead of just the B2B side. And this allowed Shivyari to create new value possibilities that are both valuable and desirable. And when COVID hit the market, this gave them remarkable momentum. And you can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy. And inspiration will spark in the next 10 minutes. Back to the interview. Exactly. But that is exactly also why I said in the beginning that it is an advantage that you are coming in from a non-tech background and from a non-logistic background, because you can see things with fresh eyes, what it really is all about. That is what is going to be that experience from that end consumer, where yes. a logistic person would come in and say, what is the problem of the warehouse management lead? Yeah. So what have you learned along that way? I mean, how has that helped you to create a platform with defensible differentiation?
So when we created this platform, as I said, we do not have any background or we do not have any standard protocol to follow to solving the problem. So what we did it, we started with the basic platform. And the platform features or upgradation happened based on the consumer needs. So that's helped us to create a multiple features which is not there in the so-called prototypes of the SaaS company. This module has to be there or this feature has to be there. We never thought that way. We thought it, what my consumer is needing it, I need to provide it to it. If it is a feature or if it's a product or if it's a page or it's a silly button on the website, I need to create it if they need it. So yeah. That's philosophy of being a you attitude, I will call it, that what my consumer needs is I need to provide it, period. And that's how we try to build the technology of the last decade. We build our technology around that. Now we have tech leaders in the team. So we hired our CPO last month or last to last month. We never had a tech leaders or the tech CPOs into the system. We just started building that team. As I said it, I'm just building the CXOs in the funnel of the organization.
Yeah, that's interesting as well.
I wanted to go from 1 to 10 now. So I need a new team, a new approach, a new energy in the body so that it functions well.
Yeah. What made that strong growth happening after 2020? Because you said we started in 2013. When it was 2020, we had about 20 people. So it's almost like 2 or 3 people per year.
And then suddenly, I would say
2.5 years later.
COVID was unfortunate for many, but it was fortunate for us.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because we got a blessing in the disguise during that period. Initially, when India went into the lockdown, yeah, Everybody was curious what is happening, what need to be done, what not need to be done, and all the chaos around the regulations and everything was happening. So we took a time of 2-3 months, evolve our system, evolve our technology, evolve our process. That helped us in scaling up the business, because when the machinery is running, you never got a time to think about it. So we took a break. We took a 2 months or a 3 months of a technological break, and we settle whatever issues we are having it. And obviously the COVID has made sure whatever everybody wants to deliver it at home. The buying behavior has changed. The people, when they were earlier spending money on their necessities, which was their traveling or their vacations or everything, and they save that money and they started using that money for the shopping, because they are sitting in the home. You need to have something to entertain yourselves. So people started buying online. So online growth business happened during the COVID. And in the 2020 or 2021, we connected with one of the India's largest ed tech company to ship it with us. So we are managing their logistics for almost now 2 years. That helped because ed tech was growing it. Everybody wanted to have the education, and the digitalization of education happened during that period. The journey, because of the ed tech and the COVID, has helped us to grow the team size, the business, and the vision enhancement happened because of that.
Really good. Yeah. I mean, I'm writing my second book, which is taking a little longer than it took me to write my first book, but it's about Remarkable Resilience is the title, or at least the theme title. What can we learn from the past period, COVID, and what happened after that, to not only create a business that survives, you know, that doesn't fall down, but actually better, the business that becomes better from it? So what are your key takeaways there? Because one thing you said that's key to me is that you took a break, you know, pause. And then you started to connect the dots in terms of what's going to happen. And then you started accelerating in that new direction.
Yeah, so the convenience. So after the COVID happened, everybody wanted to have a convenient lifestyle, convenience of their doorstep. So people used to buying online. The Indian market was not that online savvy or a digital savvy, but they started buying post-COVID. So that helped us. The convenience was the key, is what I feel it. And now the momentum has built up, everybody is okay to buy it online. They have a trust factor. So initially, we were not trusting the consumer, the seller, that if I'm getting the parcel. But post-COVID, everybody, so the D2C world in the India as of now, if I say that prior to 5 years, D2C world was not existing. Rather, the industry, D2C world was not there in the last 5 years. And mainly because of the COVID, D2C industry, which is grooming into multi-billion dollar industry now. Yeah, so true. COVID, so I would see the world in the two eyes, a pre-COVID world and the post-COVID world, purely from the e-commerce business. It's a drastic change.
Exactly. Has it meant also that you had to change how you go to market?
Yes. So as I said, the problem 10 years ago is a different and the problem now is different. Yeah. You need to approach with the new lenses. And that is what we are doing it. So earlier we were only doing it on the ground sales. So we used to go to the consumers and sell it. Now we are optimizing our digital footprint, the SEO, SMO, and all that stuff is also leading the more business to us. So obviously, yeah, the JTM strategy and the acquiring consumer strategy has been changing. And the pre-COVID, obviously, number of events and the number of exhibition was happening for the some kind of a segment. Now it is happening for the larger kind of a segment. D2 is also in the center of communication. So D2C events are happening. So going to all this BTL activity and all that has given us more acquiring consumer insight that what consumer is looking at. And when you go to this kind of exhibitions in the forum, you understand a mass problem. You don't understand one way. When you meet to the salesperson in one-on-one meeting, it's a one-person view. But when you go to the exhibitions and the BTL activity, you are hearing or gathering among the 50 people or 100 founders of a D2C, and they are talking about problems, and you try to solve that problems for them. So all this activity of the events, the post-D2C world came into the existence, and the COVID helped us change our strategy for the acquiring consumers.
Exactly. Yeah. So have you also changed on the technology side? Did you see it as a pivot or more as a focus area in one particular area?
So since beginning, so we were working with the e-commerce segment then. So our focus was on the small parcel kind of a servicing, small parcel segment. But now we are focusing on the transportation solutions, warehousing solutions, cross-border solutions. We are working on the different technological services and the tech stacks. So obviously, if I talk the language, we were using the PHP. Now, with the obviously world is moving, so we moved our system to the React and the Angular ecosystem. That helps us in being equivalent to the what market is currently using it.
I understand.
And we also built up our tech team. So we had a partially in-house team and the partially outsourced team. Now in the growth of our 2,200 team members, we have quite some people which is coming from the in-house technology team as well. So we are now building a more robust technology in-house and we are developing the team there as well.
Interesting, because I mean, like I said, I came from Unit 4 and at some point Unit 4 started outsourcing to India. And here's an Indian company that outsources to wherever.
So to the regional city, because I said it or I haven't said it. So we are there from the last 10 years or so. We are bootstrapped and the profitable. We never got into the funding until last year. Now we are obviously having that in the plate. But so last 9 years, we run it business as a bootstrapped venture. So obviously you need to save cost. You wanted to make sure that every penny you spend is making money for you. So we were not spending too much on the technology initially. Now we thought if we need to leverage the tech at the full strength, you need to have your team in-house and make sure that whatever you wanted to build it has to be the proprietary.
Yeah, wise advice there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm always impressed with companies that can build a business bootstrapped without, it's a mindset, I would say.
Yeah.
And the mindset is important in order to build a sustainable business.
Yes.
What have you learned from that period of being bootstrapped? And well, let's park it there first. What have you learned from that period of bootstrapping? And would you do it again if you would start a new company?
So bootstrapping in 2011 was the thing because obviously, and why we said it, the bootstrapping, we did it. We were new in the ecosystem. We are not from the logistic domain. We are not from the tech domain. And I don't want it to have somebody else's money to run my experiment or my experience. So I was not sure what I am doing it. So why would I go for a money? Because I can't burn somebody else's money without burning my own hands or my own money. That's the reason. That's my mindset, because I can't run my business on somebody else's money when I'm not pretty much sure that how will I run that business. So initially we thought we will go put our money into the system, we'll regenerate the business, we'll try to be at most cost efficient and the most experience centric with respect to our servicing. We will do that. Once we know, okay, now I know the trend secrets of the business, I know how to do the business, how I know growing it, then I will go for funding, because I can't burn somebody else's money without burning my own money. And I might be sounding like a different philosophy guy, but that's what I follow. I can't burn your money if I can't burn my money. And
I completely buy into that. And I mean, I'd recommend everybody to do the same, because yes, of course, if you're at a point where there's no product, where there's just vision, it's always around that.
Yeah.
But if you can build a business, you can make it real, you can get traction and predictable traction so that the income is funding the business, then at some point in time, you know, it will be a choice for you whether you fund or not. But it's a choice that you are doing, not one out of desperation because you need to survive.
And I would say it, I had an investor for 9 years. My customer was my investor. So I was listening to him and I was doing what I supposed to do it for my business.
Yeah.
And again, if you say that, if I wanted to start a new company today, obviously I would do a similar mindset. But obviously the era has been changed. So you need certain capital because obviously the expenditures and the team, the scaling faster needs certain amount of fuel infusion into the system. So if I wanted to do the build a business, but if I am confident that now I can do that business and there is a business model which is supporting the cash flow in a short run of a year or a two, I don't mind taking a money now because now I call it, I know some tricks of the business and I can do it well. So I can take a money bet on me or somebody else's money now.
True. Without gambling it and risking your own share of the company.
Because if I took it in 2011-12, it was a gamble. Somebody was playing on me. Now somebody is putting a bet. So different between the gamble and the bet is what I would say.
Like that analogy.
Yeah.
I want to write a blog about this. So one of my
I would
next
love
daily,
to co-author if you allow me.
No, but it's so well said. You know, if it's a gamble, don't do it. If it's a bet on your business, because you know, when you get that million or you get that 10 million, whatever the funding is, if you know which dials to adjust for them to just flourish,
leverage.
That's perfect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Well, go to market wise, what I hear from what you've been telling, but I'm not completely sure, is that you're running a sales led motion. You know, you're selling to enterprise type customers and not product led growth, right?
So we had a mix of both. I would say not the enterprise-led. Now we are with the, like I said, we did not have the CPO or the tech person around it. So we always driven business on the business requirement. Yeah. Now what we are building up, we are building a product which can do a DIY kind of thing. You do not need a sales team for that. And that self model is something we are building up now because now we have a 10 years of algorithm, 10 years of understanding of business. Ah. Now if I make any product, that will scale it faster rather than I do it with my hunch. So now we will into the product model.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting thing in itself. Has it got to do, I mean, are you going to attract a different type of customer with that? Or is it the same type of customer? Or is it lower end of the market?
It will be upper end of the market. So we are doing two-way expansion. One is obviously the lower mile or the grassroots consumers or who is just starting up their business. That's the one segment we said that the grassroots people. And one is somebody who is there like a big enterprise or the large enterprise, but they are still doing certain activity of logistics in a manual way or in a non-digitalized way. Because for them, logistics is one small head of a 0.02% of the admin costs. So they don't worry about it. But we wanted to go there and address the problem that as well, so that whatever is the cost center we are talking becomes either the revenue center or a retention center for the D2C guys or experience center for the retail business. So this is what we wanted to work on. So the new product of ours will work on the different experience for the different people and the different personas of the consumers.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. And then organize it in such a way that the customer can actually do the full journey and get value from your product without doing a high touch conversation with anybody in the business.
Yes.
Yeah, that's key for scaling. Talking about building the traction all the way up to the point where you decided, okay, now I'm going to get some people to bet on us. What has been fundamental for you in order to create predictable traction? Were there any things that really worked well for you?
So predictable traction comes with, I would say, obviously the tech is the key part on the getting you the predictable business, but a consumer insight and knowing your consumer who is doing business with you helps you saying that you get a sentiment. Is this client going to continue with me in the next month or not? I can sense it from the communication which he's doing it, either via email, either via call or any sorts of communication. If he's indicating it to me, that helps me identifying that is this client is going on the downward trend or an upward trend. If it is going on the downward trend, I would like to address it heads on. And that's what we do it. So my predictable business may be more human than the more of a tech, but that helped us to survive us till the journey of last 10 years. Yeah. I don't know with this scaling, how efficiently we will be able to do it humanly. But obviously now the AI is there, ML is there, and the learning of last 10 years is there. We would love to leverage that as well.
Yeah. You're talking about the sentiment. What aspect of that is about segmentation?
Yes.
What aspect of that is about messaging and hitting the right nerve, as I call it?
Yes.
Both.
Both. So, sorry, I thought you are giving the answer. So, yeah, the segmenting of the consumer is important, and with size cycle or the life cycle of business, they are in. Are they in the growth phase? Are they in the matured phase? So, basis that your answers to them changes. Your communication also changes. Your servicing also changes. So, you need to understand which kind of consumer or which life cycle currently he is into. And then you need to address the problem accordingly. If you are giving an enterprise solution to the grassroots consumer, it will not work. And your sales team will be frustrated with, like in hell, thinking, I am not able to sell it. But if you are selling it to the wrong person, the wrong product. So that's how we do that.
Yeah, very well said. That's the art of segmentation. In my long form blogs, I'm talking about creating your favorite segmentation cocktail, because it's about a lot of these ingredients that are about, whether your communication will be on the same wavelength. And that is really important. Once it's off, you get a conflicting signal.
Communication helps you to connect. If your communicating is confusing them, you are losing the charm.
Well said. Yeah, exactly. So, going towards the last two questions that I have actually for today. I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect, which is about what is characterizing software businesses that people start talking about and keep talking about. Knowing that you've been around for 10 years, maybe I can actually really help you start getting you going with the reflection. What has been really important for you to become a software business that your customers keep talking about?
So the support or the ears we give it to our consumer, that helped us to understand their problem well and solve it accordingly, was the key of success, I would say.
Be it about so it was driven by support.
Yes. Good. So if you know, and I don't know, you know the Hindi part of it. So our name is Ship Yari. Yari is about the friendship and the emotions around it. So we say that we are your friends. You can trust upon, you can rely upon, and we work together to solve your problems. So that's helped us, or that was our domain expertise with respect to the core value proposition that helped us to sail through this journey of 10 years.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, funny enough, I wrote a post about it yesterday, and it's a long form post that's building up around what helps you become the one in your industry, the obvious one. And one thing at the end is one segment of that whole long story is about that you provide value beyond your product. And so many companies forget that. They just focus on the product, whereby it's the total experience that the customer is getting from you. And I think you've met there with how you've approached it last.
At the end of the day, the person you are communicating is human. You need to talk human. Though via tech, but you need to talk human. You can't be a emotionless person while dealing with some other person. And that's the bottom line is what we follow.
Yeah, very good. Very good. I love that. Thanks for sharing that. Now, last question. From your experience being the CEO of a company, non-tech founder, non-domain expert founder, what is a do and what is a don't that you'd like to share with peer SaaS CEOs?
So do, I would say that, like I said it in the beginning, see the problem in a different lenses. Don't say it in the ordinary way everybody is saying it. That's a do, I would say that. And don't is that, I would again rephrase it, don't prejudice your past for your futures. Whatever happened in the past doesn't need to be there in the future. See it with the new lenses. So these are the don'ts, I would say. So unlearn the past, which made you regret some point of time. But obviously, that will help you to build tomorrow. But that's not the only parameter you need to keep it in the mind while you are making the decision.
Well said. Well, these are, I think, some very nice and wise words to close the interview with. Thanks very much, John. You're sharing the story about Ship Yari. And it's fascinating what you've been accomplishing over the last 10 years. I'll keep following you on the next part of the journey, the next 10 years.
Yes. So that's what we are excited about it. And we wanted to build, like I said, sustainable, scalable, and a defendable venture, which solves the problem of consumers in whatever segments of business we do.
Good. Well, where can people go to find out more about your company or to say hi to you?
They can visit our website, which is www.shipyari.com, or they can write back to me at nayan@shipyari.com, and I'm happy to help with any kind of solutions or any kind of support which I can help of any ways. I would happy to do that.
Thank you very much. And this ends my conversation with Nayan. I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspires you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Nayan Ratandaira, co-founder and CEO of Shipyari. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.